Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchless.com. I'm your host, Eric Samolsky, joined by somebody with, I thought it was a giant yoga ball behind you, but I think it's a green screen. It's Nick Pollock in the yoga ball.
My old green screen. What is happening? Actually, I put it to the back of my chair. Yeah, it's also a new angle because my main camera just completely died on me. So I've got this lovely new angle just for you guys right now. As Cashew is putting out her paw for me.
I think you got to start doing it from like three angles and you could turn to different cameras.
It's true. My angle, camera one, camera two. Yeah. And we are going to go through all the teams as we do on this podcast. Here and there, we'll talk about a specific guy and we'll go a little bit deeper on them. But Eric, what order are we going to do today?
We're going to go from the bottom to the top. So we're going to start in the NL West. Ooh. And we are going to totally reverse script. If possible, we are going to try to highlight just some guys who we think, may also be gaining in value in the next week or so. The trade deadline is happening. We understand that in your fantasy leagues, you may want to try to get a jump on adding somebody. If you think that the value is going to go up, or if somebody is going to enter the rotation who might not currently be in the rotation, as always, we're going to do our best to help you with that kind of stuff. It is hard a week and a half out to really know how things are going to go. So, there might not be tons of situations like that, but we'll do our best when we see one to identify one. Could be happening with the Arizona Diamondbacks. A few guys entering into the rotation right now. They are three at Washington this weekend, three at Pittsburgh next week, and then three at Cleveland. As of right now, that is set up to be a two-start week for Merrill Kelly next week at Pittsburgh and at Cleveland. How intrigued by you are that? How intrigued by that are you? Because Cleveland is obviously a decent matchup, but Pittsburgh against a righty, it's not a great matchup for Merrill Kelly. Is that just 15 teamers only for you?
Yeah, I think so. In the last four starts, he has actually picked it up a bit. It was strange. Last night, actually, Merrill Kelly didn't really have his changeup doing things. Which is the one pitch that Merrill Kelly really needs, in my view. So not thrilled about it. I mean, yes, at Cleveland is good. It's worse now because Jose Ramirez just returned. It's funny, yesterday on the craft, I was like, oh yeah, there's no Jose Ramirez. And then it's like, hey, he's returning today. I'm like, oh, never mind. As I got off of that one. Also to note, you have Brandon Fott at Cleveland, which isn't so bad. He's been pitching much better. Like his command in general has been better. He is going against the Cardinals today. I actually don't know if he's already pitched. He hasn't pitched yet. Oh man, yeah. You were really so happy about Gavin Williams. Oh my gosh. Fought is someone who is improving a little bit. I don't really think that he's taken this massive step or anything like that. And I don't want to throw him against Pittsburgh, but he's also considerable for your 15 teamers.
Yeah, I wrote up Brandon Fought in my streaming article on Monday, and I basically just looked at what he's done specifically against lefties since coming back. And he's basically moved away from the cutter and the curve and moved more into the changeup than he did before. And the issue with, to me, what stood out to me is that I think that's a command based move. He couldn't really command the curve. It got whiffs, but he also couldn't command it. And so that's why you're seeing the better ratios and the better command metrics, but you're not seeing the strikeouts, is that basically he just went to the pitch mix and started throwing pitches he could throw in the zone, and he's getting weak contact on the changeup. And so that is leading to better ratios, but leading to less swing and miss. And so, like, to me, that puts Fought on the 15 team streamer radar, where, like, I don't love guys who are giving up that much contact and not missing bats, but if you're in a deeper format, maybe that'll work for you. But
yeah, I mean, you have an opportunity to go six innings. And I think that's something where I can kind of overlook it at times, where it's just, hey, look, you can go six innings, one and run. Like, that's a possibility. And there are a lot of pitchers out there we get excited about, but we don't really have any expectations for them to do that consistently. Yeah. So,
and we should just note that Mitch Bratt and Cole Drake are both set to get starts this weekend against the Nationals. They are not locked into the rotation after that. And the Nationals, as we've discussed many times on the show, are one of the best offenses in baseball against left-handed pitchers. And so I would probably avoid those two guys for the weekend, and their future is up in the air after this weekend.
Right. It might be Zach Allen coming back, which would kick out, I think, Brat as opposed to Cole Drake. I think Cole Drake's the better pitcher. Not very exciting, but there is some swatch potential there, a little bit of a kitchen sink, all that stuff on the left side at like 91 to 93 or something along those lines. So I wouldn't focus on that with the Nationals, but you might want to go after it if he were to stick around against Cleveland instead of Zach Gallen returning. Yeah.
And to disappoint you, we're not going to be super quick on the Rockies section because I do have a question for Nick, because Gabriel Hughes has pitched relatively well from a statistical standpoint of late. He gets San Diego on the road, so it's not a Coors start. And I'm just curious if there's anything for people in like deeper formats to care about there.
He throws 92, 93, 68% of the time. That's his four seamer. Okay. 7 feet of an extension. But I mean, last night it was 5 innings and 1 earned run. And it was a 75% strike rate with that fastball with a 7% swing strike rate. It is, I don't even think if you take it out of Coors, it's not really very good. You can argue that it's a cutter, because it does have a ton of like cut action. It was -2 horizontal break yesterday, but that's just all he throws.
Yeah.
And I do not believe in that. It's also not like the most incredibly commanded pitch.
Sure.
He's filling the zone with cut four seamers. And maybe that's good enough, but there isn't anything to compare it off of. Like it's a little bit different when a guy's throwing that pitch and then also having the four seamer in the sinker. Because then it's really hard to differentiate between them, which makes it so much better. But now if it's just that, then it's a lot easier to pick up.
Yeah. Good. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Moving on to the Dodgers, 3 at the Mets this weekend, 3 home against Seattle, 3 home against Boston. It's set up on Fangraphs to be a 2-start week for Justin Robleski, because we know that Shohei Ohtani is not pitching right now. But again, it's the Dodgers. they may find somebody to throw. They may go to Landon Knack. They may do a bullpen game. And so I don't know that I'd bank on the 2-start week for Justin Robleski. But everything is pretty stock standard here with all these guys. Roki Sasaki was throwing 101 out of the break and gets the Mets on Friday, though.
I mean, that's really cool. I'm waiting for him to do it again on Friday against the
Would
Mets.
Would you start him against the Mets, though?
I'm questionable because I feel like it's just one start. It's an anomaly. We've seen anomalies from Roki Sasaki all year.
True. Okay. Eric Lauer, you're still just kind of holding for quality starts or wins at this point in time. But that's
another one yesterday.
You're just hoping for wins. That's what you're hoping for. And for some people, I'm in some leagues where that's what I need. And so I've been running him out there and hoping he doesn't blow up the ratios and it's working. The Padres, they're 3 at Miami this weekend. 2 home against the Rockies next week, and then 4 against the Giants. Is this just Michael King and nobody else?
Yeah, and Michael King has done better lately. I remember last week with you and Spore and Eno talking about like Michael King, I don't really trust right now, and I still don't kind of trust him. I don't know. Watching him, it's like, yes, you do have some very good pitches in there, but then sweeper is sometimes very good, sometimes not. And gosh, it's still really weird, but it is Rocky Road and then hosting the Giants. So, all right, that's probable start. Otherwise, JP Sears has been better. No, I can't do it.
We should acknowledge, just because this is, as you said, hosting the Giants. That is on Sunday. That's the day before the trade deadline. This is just a general discussion of like with these guys who are starting at the end of the week, just keep up with trades because you never know how it's going to impact the lineup that they're facing. And we don't obviously know right now, and we're not going to project right now, but just as you get closer to the weekend, just make sure you're checking to see if anybody has been moved, because that Giants lineup in particular could miss a few hitters that they currently have. And that would impact who you're thinking of about throwing.
Yeah, that's
the
a great
Giants
point.
In particular, also have 3 against the Angels this weekend. They have 3 against Milwaukee next week and 4 on the road in San Diego. It's 2-start week for both Tyler Mahle and Landon Roop. We discussed Landon Roop on that show with all four of us about everybody kind of thinking his second half should be better than his first half. Started off the second half with a pretty decent start. And then he gets a two-step that, listen, Milwaukee-San Diego isn't the best lineup you could face. But I think it's worth starting a pitcher of his caliber in a 12-team league in those matchups. I probably couldn't do it with Tyler Mahle, though.
Tyler Mahle, yeah, no. Landon Roop's actually, it's kind of wild. I mean, sure, he's had like one or two like blow-ups a little bit. The one after Pride Night and just another random one. And outside of that, he's been stellar over the last, I want to say, like 10 games. So I feel pretty good with Landon Roop there, decisions aside. And Robbie Ray, we have no idea. He's just insane to me right now. He's playing more sinkers than four-seamers, even though now the sinker is getting fewer strikes than the four-seamer. And the four-seamer is obviously a much better pitch for him. It always has been. It's been his best pitch. What is going on? You're doing this against right-handers, not like just the left-handers. I don't know. He gets the Angels and the Padres. Like, you should be doing this effectively. Like, this, you should be fine. And it's not going to be like this forever. I just, you know, I was talking to Eno about this yesterday after the show, and he didn't really know where to put Robbie Ray. He put him pretty far down ultimately. And I'm like, I just don't think that Robbie Ray is going to be this guy for the next 2 months. Right. There's just,
well, he certainly won't be in a Giants uniform. So he won't be that guy.
Yeah. Right. There you go.
Speaking of Angels and Padres, those are the matchups that Carson Wisenhunt gets. Carson Wisenhunt now in the rotation for Trevor McDonald. Just curious, if in what league types would you be interested in Carson Wisenhunt?
In time, I would be interested. I think he can get back to the velocity of 95, 96 we saw in the spring. That'd be amazing. But I don't think he's commanding well enough at the moment to be a proper swatch.
So you might right now be looking in NL-only formats, yes, and, you know, just hoping to see. And again, maybe this changes with a great start on Sunday against the Angels. Mm-hmm. We'll have to look into that and see how it goes. Moving to the NL Central, we've got the Cubs. Three at Pittsburgh this weekend, four at St. Louis next week, and then three home against the Yankees. So that's a two-start week for both David Peterson and Colin Ray, Cardinals-Yankees. That's a tough one. Based on where you have them, I think you would lean Colin Ray, but probably would avoid even in 15 teamers, those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, Peterson, Eno was pointing out to me that Peterson has a slightly different four-seamer now, a little bit more cut.
More cut,
With the Cubs, but I do not buy into this at all. And Jameson Taillon, unfortunately, that's just, yeah, those matchups are not very good. And Colin Ray, yeah, it wasn't great yesterday. He allowed a home run at the very end of it, and that ruined the day. But in St. Louis is kind of nice, and he's decent. I mean, he's shockingly just like, to me, he is the Spider-Man, like the most Toby of Tobies of just, yep, yeah, I'm going to maybe do go like 5 innings, 200 runs, and hopefully get you one.
Yeah. What did you see from, I know the results weren't great, but what did you see from Jameson Taillon in his return from the IL? And are you at all interested in grabbing him in any formats?
Yeah, I love that he has a clear approach, right? I mean, he's now starting to do more inside sinkers and then sweepers away to right-handers. And he attacked well, I think, to left-handers. It all ultimately didn't really work out the way we wanted to. And these matchups are terrible, but I think when it does clear up for him, you know, he faces easier teams in the second half. Yeah, that might be a 12 teaming.
We're streaming.
Oh, got it.
With 12 teaming. And then, yep, just Matthew Boyd starting to look really good again. And he has been, the roster rate is trending up. But if, you know, I think it's 62% in Yahoo right now. So if he's still floating out there in your shallower formats, Matthew Boyd, worth adding for sure. Moving to the Reds, three at St. Louis this weekend. Then they have three home against the Guardians and four home against the Pirates. So that is seven games in Great American Ballpark. I understand it's not Coors or Sacramento, but it is still a very offensive friendly environment. So keep that in mind. It's two-start week for Chase Burns, who you don't care about where he's pitching, what environment, but it's two-start week for Brady Singer. It's Cleveland and Pittsburgh, but it's at home. That Pittsburgh start at home probably not a great one. And so if you wanted to use Singer as a one-off, but in a league where you're locked into him all week, that's a little bit problematic.
Yeah, it's with Brady Singer, too. I mean, he is doing a good job getting his slider and sweeper down, but it's not that great. And Cleveland does have Jose Ramirez back now.
Yeah.
So I was really tempted to put him into the do not start tier. I hope Nick Lodolo's okay and fine and can make that Cleveland start and no hiccups or anything like that, too.
It's so tough with the blisters, man. They keep coming back and you just have to wonder.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's a specific pitch or what, but you just have to wonder if it's going to be something that he consistently battles unless he changes something about how he grips the ball, which could obviously change how impactful he is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then there's Andrew Rabbit, who just kind of does Andrew Rabbit things. So whatever. But I think I'm going to lower Nick Lodolo into questionable just because we don't know how far he's going to even go in that game.
I get that. And the Guardians bullpen allows a game tying single in the eighth to cost Gavin Williams the win after going 7 shutout innings with 11 strikeouts.
Oh, man.
And we'll get no win to show for it because wins are a terrible stat.
No.
Moving to the Milwaukee Brewers, 3 home against the Rockies this weekend. 3 at San Francisco next week, 3 at the Angels. Nick, are we still bought in on Brandon Sproat because he gets the Giants and the Angels in a 2-step next week and it can't really get that much better in terms of matchups?
Yeah, I mean, you got to do it, right? And the last one was not the overall approach that we wanted from him.
Right.
It's as simple as that. And it feels like a step back. It's like, man, wait, why aren't you still building on the thing? But it could be one of those days where like, yeah, I just didn't have it that day. Okay, fine. But you got 2 really good ones here. The Brewers have been putting a lot of faith in him, which we'd love to see. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is worthy of a 12-teamer as well. Brandon Sproat.
Robert Gasser looks like he'll probably get a longer look right now, at least until Kyle Harrison comes back. He gets the Rockies, he gets Rocky Road this weekend, and then he gets the Angels. Those are also pretty solid matchups for a guy who's pretty widely available right now.
Yeah, I mean, Gasser against Rocky Road is really nice. I don't love that he doesn't have a very good changeup yet. And it feels a little, I don't know, I'm not so convinced yet of Robert Gasser. I also prefer right-handers against the Angels. Because as you saw yesterday, who went sweeper heavy and got a ton of whiffs on that was, I can't remember his name all of a sudden. I was just looking him up. But anyway, that's typically how things, how you succeed against the Angels. Robert Gasser being a southpaw doesn't really help with that. So I'm not as excited as I should be from that matchup. But still, yeah, against Rocky Road, like, cannot not.
Was last night Perkins or was?
No. Gosh, maybe it was Perkins. No, I'll get to in a moment. Okay. But, Hunter Dobbins just killed with the sweeper away and nothing else.
Oh, Dobbins. Right. Dobbins.
That's what it was.
Yeah. We have to talk about the Miz because it seems like we are in a stretch right now where my guess is until September, but that's just a guess. The Brewers are going to limit his overall innings. He pitched just 4 innings against the Mets and space out some of his starts. And I think they will get him back probably in September on regular rotation, deep starts, because you don't want him. You want him back in the normal routine before the playoffs. Yeah. You don't want him, you know, continuing to only pitch 3 or 4 innings at a time on extra rest. And then the playoffs start and you're like, all right, we're not doing that anymore. Cause he needs to adapt back. But for the next 4+ weeks, it might be a lot of 4 inning stretches for him 1 time a week. And I listen, they're going to be really good innings. And so I think you're kind of hamstrung in fantasy, unless you're in a trading league where you can somehow land like another top 10 or 15 starter by giving up him and something else. Cause you're not going to like trade him for like Gavin Williams. right? You can't go that far down the list with a trade for Mizorowski, can you?
No. I think also we have these conversations every year about innings limits and how they're going to use guys, and we never actually know, mm-hmm. right? It's not a certainty that you're only going to get four innings or three innings for the next month for Jake Mizorowski. I remember last year it was Drew Rasmussen. I can't speak today. I don't know why. Who was limited for like two starts. And then he's like, whatever. Okay, we're done with that. And everyone was freaking out about it. And yeah, that was all it was. So I understand that there's going to be some fear about it. And yes, I have to remove him from number one in all likelihood if we do see another shortened start from Jacob Mizorowski. But if we don't, I mean, it's not really a death sentence that he's going to be this for the next month or so. It might just be 2-3 weeks and that's it.
Yep. That's entirely possible. Just depends how risk averse you are or how much you like need the certainty in your leagues.
And if you're in a head-to-head league too, by the way, hold, because yeah. September you probably will be,
yes,
you know, throwing full starts again.
For sure. Moving to the Pirates, 3 against the Cubs this weekend, 3 against the Diamondbacks next week, and then 4 at the Reds. It's 2-start week for Bubba Chandler next week and Mitch Keller. But Arizona and then at Cincinnati for Bubba Chandler. We should talk about his start against the Yankees last night because it was easily the best start he's had this year. And I noticed, and I messaged you about it. Listen, a 2.1 mile an hour change in your slider isn't just, hey, I was amped up. Like, I'm sure that was a component of it, but it's also very clearly a intended change. His strike rate on the slider last night, I don't know if I said change it before, but I meant slider, but the 2.1 mile an hour increase in the slider. But his strike rate on the slider last night was 82%. And on the year, his strike rate on the slider is 64%. So it is very possible that he went to a harder, tighter slider to command it better. And at least against the Yankees, it worked. But he didn't throw it at all in 2-strike counts. So he wasn't looking to get whiffs on it. So I'm very confused and intrigued by what he was doing.
I think there's something up with his arm angle a little bit because we also saw 3 to 4 inches of horizontal run on the four seamer as well for Bubba Chandler. And to see 18% swing strike rates on that is a huge deal as well. You also have the slider movement changing, reducing its drop by 2-3 inches mm-hmm. to 5.5. So to me, this is turning more into the cutter realm yeah. of being, you know, 5-6 inches above the gyro. And now it's at 92 and not really around 90. And that means more strikes. You are really relying on batters to do something with this now, as opposed to getting into better counts and then sitting on whatever they want inside the zone. It's a much better version of Bubba Chandler, but I don't want to act as if he still had like amazing command, right? A lot of these sliders to lefties were just right there in the middle of the plate. And only one of them was punished, and it was a double from Cody Bellinger. Down and in a 1-2 count that was like inside the quadrant of the nitro zone, right? And I don't know if that can last in that same way. The changeup command is still questionable. The sinker command is still questionable. It was a much better start. I'm not sold that Bubba Chandler is completely fixed. You're gonna see that in the roundup that comes out later today. Only a 38% zone rate on the four seamer still, mm-hmm. reliant on that near 40% O swing that he's had. I don't know if that's going to stick as well. So it's better. I think you're right that it is a more refined slider, like one he's more capable of keeping inside the zone and wield. And it is interesting to see that extra movement on that four-seamer that could mean it's going to get more whiffs now. So against Arizona, you know, I could push that into making that a questionable start, or I could push it to be a do not start. I can go either way with it. I think I'm going to leave it as a questionable start right now.
I think I'm more apt to start Bubba Chandler against Arizona and then see what happens at Cincinnati. And I in 15 team leagues, I could see using him in the 2-start week, like just locking it in. In a 12-team league, I would still be nervous about that at Cincinnati start. I know that I'm ready in a 12-team league to say that this is a new version of Bob Chandler. Mm-hmm. Like, listen, Jared Jones's roster rate is rising, but just if you're in those leagues where, you know, it's still like 42%, like, just pick him up. He looks good. We thought that he would shake the rust and get better. It's happening. And so there you go. You did this. You like did this when you were talking about Chandler and the camera just zoomed all the way.
This is oh my gosh. All right. We got to go to a break. I got to figure this out. We're going to break.
We're going to break so Nick can figure out his camera.
Oh my gosh. All right, Eric. Camera is still going to be wonky. It's all right.
It's going to be wonky. We're going to get through it. And we should be quick with the Cardinals. They go home against Cincinnati this weekend. 4 against the Cubs next week. 3 at Toronto. It's a two-start week for Michael McGreevy and Matthew Liberatore. I understand McGreevy is pitching really well, and if you want to roll the dice because one of those starts is at Toronto, fine. But the Cubs start worries me. He worries me. But you, my friend, have not bought into anything that Kyle Leahy is doing recently. He is not a start on your list.
No, I'm just... I feel like Kyle Leahy is someone I was very intrigued by at the beginning of the year with 7 feet plus of extension and some good movement on the breakers. The four-seamer and the sinker are very uninspiring. 93, 94, they do not have good movement on them. And the results that he's been getting, I think, is very just fortunate, to say the least. I wouldn't be trusting Kyle Leahy actually having any sort of breakout moving forward. I don't really feel like he's doing much different that justifies that success. And yeah, I'd rather just not do it. I mean, the benefit you could say about the Cincinnati star is that it is in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And the Jays aren't the toughest offense, but I just see like another 5.1 innings, 3-4 earned run game.
I'm with you. Like, I understand if you're in a really deep format, you want to, you know, roll the dice because it's kind of like a Vargas rule that he's just pitching really well right now, but it makes me nervous, and I wouldn't be doing it in most league types, but you know, 15s, you got to do some crazy things sometimes. The Braves, they go 3 at Baltimore this weekend, 3 at the Mets next week, and 4 against the Nationals. 2-start week for Martin Perez and Chris Sale. Obviously you're going to be using Chris Sale. Martin Perez is a more difficult decision because one of those starts at the Mets is intriguing. More for deeper formats, but it's intriguing. But again, Washington versus lefties is something we would like to avoid. So that's a risky one in a 2-start week. And then I get Bryce Elder like looked a little better the last start, but Bryce Elder and Grant Holmes, I can't really go along with this. And like Reynaldo Lopez, the last few starts have not been great.
I mean, I don't think that this is the rotation we see next week. It is the week leading into the trade deadline. And we do believe that Atlanta needs at least one starting pitcher.
Right.
So I would not be shocked if that Saturday start from Martin Perez is donezo, maybe Bryce Elder or Reynaldo Lopez. I don't know what they're going to do exactly, but I wouldn't be shocked if someone else steps in here. And if it's a solid pitcher, you throw him against the Nationals. If it's an okay pitcher, you throw him against the Mets if he were to get one of those starts.
And we should just note that AJ Smith-Shawver continues to put up good numbers and look pretty good in the minors. And so he might be back next week. He might be back the week after. They may be waiting to see how many starters they can add before deciding what to do with him. But he's not a bad stash in deeper formats because he probably beats out Elder and Lopez for spots when he's healthy, even if they don't, you know, no matter how many other guys they add.
Yeah.
The Marlins have 3 against the Padres this weekend. They have 3 against the Phillies next week and 4 at the Mets, which makes it a 2-start week for Tyler Phillips and Sandy Alcantara. No to Tyler Phillips. Yes for Sandy Alcantara. And then yes for Eury Pérez. And I think we're just kind of avoiding the rest, although
it's not easy.
Jansen Junk at the Mets next week.
No. Just stop. No. Eury Pérez is looking better. We hope that he keeps throwing strikes with the secondaries. It was really exciting to see that. And Sandy Alcantara, oh my gosh, I cannot believe they didn't pull him in the 8th inning yesterday. He's already over 90 pitches. He allows a first base runner to start the 8th single, finally leave him in. Then he allows a home run, 2-run shot. They leave him in, and he has a 7-pitch full count home run. It's just, this is avoidable.
Yeah.
It's not like he was about to finish the eighth. He hadn't gotten it out yet in the eighth.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
It's a lack of trust in the bullpen, I guess, but that was difficult. Avoidable things also in the Mets. You don't have to play Brett Beatty in right field, New York Mets. You got 5 outfielders and you killed our boy Christian Scott. But the Mets, 3 at the Dodgers, home against the Dodgers this weekend, 3 against the Braves, 4 against the Marlins. It's 2-start week for Christian Scott next week. Braves, Marlins. Listen, I know that he didn't pitch great regardless yesterday, but it was 2 outs in the second inning, and he got a routine fly ball to right field that should have been caught. 2 runs scored when the ball fell, and then another run would come around to score. Those were the only runs he allowed. The pitch, it elevated the pitch count as well. Again, you're not saying, hey, ignore it, like he was great. It wasn't a dominant outing, yeah, but it was not as poor as the stat line suggests. And even though the Braves are a good team, you know, Braves Marlins with Christian Scott is not a 2-step that I'm avoiding. Team leagues, since your chances of getting 2 wins are pretty low, and your chances of some high ratios or some high whip at least is kind of high, I might avoid it in a 12 team, but in a 15, I would roll that dice, and I'm definitely starting him against Miami in most league types.
Yeah. There's also Zach Thorne, who could get that Clay Holmes start. He would be the one on Sunday.
That would be a 2-step for Zach Thorne, possibly.
And right. And I don't think that the Adobe would take over for Thorne. I think you'd take over for Manaea if this were to happen, which would mean it's possible that, you know, that goes on the following series for Clay Holmes as opposed to Sunday. Yeah.
I think Thornton is going to get the start because the Mets, I'm like blanking on the name of their interim manager right now.
Andy Green. He said he's in the rotation.
Yeah. Andy Green said that Clay Holmes is going to start Thursday in the minors, and then he needs one more start. So that means he's going to make a minor league start next week, which means it's highly unlikely he's up for the Mets on Sunday. And I think he might not even be on the Mets on Sunday. They are trying to trade him. So my money would be on Zach Thornton in a 2-start week, unless the Mets were to add somebody. I think that Zach Thornton is not the, like, hey, this is a lefty who doesn't throw that hard, but we're seeing Jake Bennett do it. To me, Thornton doesn't have that same type of pitch mix where, like, he doesn't have the swatch changeup that we tend to like from the soft tossing lefties. Yep. Where
it's just,
I don't know how sustainable this is, but it's working right now. He fills up the zone with 5 pitches. And so, you know, I get it in deeper formats, but I'm not super into it.
Yeah. It's a 4-seamer cutter guy from the left side. Right. And if you can do that, then you can get outs against right-handers consistently. That's cool, but not much else is going on, which makes me kind of tepid about it. But yeah, 2-step, that's fine with me for Zach Thornton.
I don't even know that the Phillies' schedule matters because you're going to start Lizardo, Sanchez, and Wheeler regardless of who they face, and you're not going to start Aaron Nola or whoever the 5th starter is. And so I think that kind of ends the Phillies' discussion.
I mean, yeah, whoever they trade for to replace Brian Keller.
Their report today was that they would trade for an arm who would be a starter for them in the postseason. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But also, like, you have 3 really good starters. So maybe trade for like a number 3 or 4 who would start for you in the postseason, but not like a top of the line arm.
Yeah, exactly.
But we'll see what they do. The Nationals, they have 3 against Arizona this weekend. They have 3 against Toronto next week, and 4 at Atlanta. It's 2-start week for Andrew Alvarez, but it is a 2-start week.
Yes.
For Cade Cavalli.
Yes. Okay.
And we have to talk about it because I have had Cade Cavalli on my bench in a 12 team league for the last 2 starts because it was Yankees and then it was at Coors. And I was just like, I don't know. Like, yeah, the Rockies aren't good, but it's at Coors, but blah, blah. And he's been lights out. And I we're getting to the time of, like, unless it's the Dodgers, like I might be just using Cade Cavalli right now.
So Cavalli, here's the whole story is I was out because it was a 96 mile per hour four seamer and sinker that you couldn't really command well, that weren't getting whiffs. And the only good thing was this 85 mile per hour curveball slash sweeper, which is kind of the same pitch. And that's really it. And wasn't enough, right? What we just saw against the Rockies, not even Fenway, was an extra tick on the four seamer that's starting to get more whiffs now. We saw the curveball jump all the way up to 87, 88, again, like it was in Fenway. And then we saw 21 cutters, 21, not like eight, not like 12, maybe four, 21. It's now like the real number three pitch that I've been waiting so long for him to have. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. He's breaking out now. This is it. So absolutely go get Cade Cavalli and hold on tight. Jays and Atlanta, I don't really care. You're starting him and you're going with Foster Griffin as long as that holds as well.
Yeah, this is a really good example of just like adjusting your priors in the middle of the season, because you and I both had said we didn't really buy into Cade Cavalli, and now we both are buying into Cade Cavalli, and it's because there were meaningful changes.
Exactly.
There was just a report out that just came out that said the Brewers had in with the Tigers on Tarek Skubal, and listen, I'd be very excited. The Brewers have like one of the best farm systems in baseball. They could certainly make that trade. That would be super interesting.
And the Tigers should do it. I talked about it with Eno yesterday. I was like, you have to do it. I don't care if there's a sliver of a chance that you make the playoffs, let alone the World Series. And it's just, guys, you are setting yourself up for years if you do this right now.
Right. And the Brewers could give the Tigers like prospects, but also throw in Shane Drohan, Brandon Sproat, like arms that could be in the Tigers rotation right now as well. So anyway, we'll see how that goes, but it's interesting. Yep. We're going to move to the AL and we're going to start same way, AL West. We have the Athletics, three at Minnesota this weekend, four home against Boston next week, and then three home against Detroit. So again, these are seven games in Sacramento. I can't start anybody, Nick. I know that you have Gage Jump in a two-step as a questionable start.
It's questionable. And the game yesterday, let me tell you,
so bad.
He threw some terrible fastballs for home runs. I mean, they were like down the middle.
You've got a Boston team that is like,
I'm not disagreeing
19 and three, and also is a top five offense against lefties. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. It is the bottom of questionable. I just also recognize that more so than the most typical do not start guys, like he can go six innings, seven strikeouts. Like,
and maybe Gage Jump figures it out in 2027. I just think I might be done with it for 2026. It hasn't looked good at home or on the road. Moving on to Houston, three at Chicago this weekend, three at LA, then three home against Texas, which makes it a two start week for Tetsuya Imai.
No.
We should just note, not that either one of us is like suggest. I think you called him a hipster, I think, in the last SP roundup you did.
Yep.
It seems as though there's reporting out of Houston that they basically told him, dude, you can't throw two pitches. You can't do it anymore. Like you have to throw other pitches. And the reporting that I read, the implication was that this discussion has happened multiple times throughout the year.
Oh my God.
And it makes sense because all the reports coming from Japan were like, this guy has five pitches.
Right.
And then he throws two of them. And so we did see what appeared to be a changeup, not a splitter, in the last outing. And, you know, whatever. It's not like a massive difference maker. But one thing to just keep an eye on in these next starts is whether the expanded arsenal becomes something that's a little more consistent, if that really was kind of like a top-down directive. And again, I don't have the intestinal fortitude to start him. I've done it so many times this year, I can't. But if the start against the Angels looks good and there are three or more pitches again, I could see jumping in against the Rangers because the Rangers are not an offense that scares me. But locking this in as a two-start week would really scare me.
Right. Yeah, you never know what you're going to get with Amaya. And I got to say, it's really surprising that Peter Lambert is my favorite start of all of them, because Hunter Brown's four-seamer is just really bad right now. Yeah. It's just, he does not know where it's going. It's lower velocity. I actually did bring it up a little bit past 96, but I don't trust that at all. And I can't go against the White Sox with that in Texas. So at Los Angeles Angels, Peter Lambert, favorite one.
Did you care at all that Ronel Blanco rejoined the rotation? Other than
it's
like,
kind of cool.
Hey, I mean, kudos to you. It was over 450 days. And so good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I mean, I need to see more first.
Yeah. You know, he had been interesting in the past. So we'll see but I'm not adding him anywhere right now. The Angels, three at the Giants, three against Houston, and then three against Milwaukee. It's a two-start week next week for Walbert, Urania, Houston, and Milwaukee. And I don't care that those aren't great matchups. I think that Walbert Urania has just earned our trust.
Yes, absolutely. I think he's earned our trust. Yeah, his changeup is just really good.
Yes.
It's wild. He also increases velocity last time, too. For you, Eric, I put Ryan Johnson at San Francisco Giants as a questionable.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Nick is saying that because I sent him I posted a tweet and then I sent it to Nick where I just said, because it was like a blurb that I was doing. After Ryan Johnson's last start, which was also a decent start, he came into the day with a 270 ERA, 0.95 whip, and a 23.4% strikeout rate in his last four games. 15.1% swinging strike rate to right-handed hitters because he's a sweeper cutter guy, and 11% swinging strike rate to lefties, which, you know, is fine if you're missing more bats to righties. Ryan Johnson was a really high draft pick, and the Angels have done a lot of their high draft picks a disservice. He was yo-yoed up and down from the majors to the minors. He was used as a reliever. He was used as a bulk follower. He was used as a starter. He, like, you do that, especially with young pitchers, and they have no ability to just kind of like adapt to a routine and work on their pitch mixes and all this kind of stuff. And so I just think, like, I'm not saying Ryan Johnson figured something out. I'm just saying I don't think he was done any favors by the organization in the early part of his career. And I am willing to say, hey, I don't think the 650 ERA or whatever is a clear indication of the talent of the player. And so I'm seeing what he's doing. It's improving. The Giants start is a pretty decent matchup. And in a 15-team league, if you're really in need of a streamer over the weekend, not one that will get you a win, though maybe he does against the Giants, I think it is feasible, but it's not like I would then run out and throw him against the Brewers. I just think he might wind up a deep league streamer if these recent changes are something that's actually worth pursuing.
No, I can totally see that. I just hate the fact that he just throws really soft and it's like splitter focus and it's just kind of like blah. But sure, it could work. Jose Soriano, you never know what you're gonna get. I mean, I'm glad it was better last time. I don't know. Reed Demers is looking good with his slider, so we're cool with that. And Grayson Rodriguez, you can't trust. I'm going to speed this along, Eric, because we're running out of time.
Maybe here. Detmers and Soriano look good in a different uniform.
It's very, very possible. The Mariners, you just start them all except for Luis Castillo, and Emerson Hancock is going to go against the Dodgers away from Seattle. So it's just, all right, maybe not that one.
My two questions for you on the Rangers. The Rangers have a two-start week next week, so it is Seattle and Houston. It's ostensibly a two-start week for Kumar Rocker. We've done this dance. We've talked about it all the time, but he continues to be solid. It's Tampa Bay, Houston. In a 15-team league, are you using him in a two-start week?
Yeah, 15-team, that's okay. He throws cutter, slider effectively. I mean, he actually located them really well in his last one, so fine.
And In any leagues, are you stashing? Are you adding Jordan Montgomery in the anticipation?
No, I'm so curious how he looks. I know the minor league starts have not been good for him, but I'm just so curious.
Yeah,
that's all. And I will mention also,
I can't add him until I see it happen. But yeah, that's me.
Yeah, Nathan Eovaldi's been really rough. Like he said, one game in those last 10 under 300 runs, which is so shocking. But it should be better. I don't really quite grasp it right now.
Yeah.
But that should turn around.
We will also turn this around with a nice little speed round to end this, but we're going to do that after this break. Moving on to the AL Central, we've got the White Sox. 3 versus Houston this weekend, 4 versus the Yankees, 3 at Tampa Bay next week. It's 2-start week for Anthony Kay and Noah Schultz. Noah Schultz, who maybe shouldn't be in the rotation anymore. I couldn't start. I don't know that I could start either one of these guys, even in a 15-team league.
No, I agree with that. Anthony Kay just had really good command with his cutter inside to right-handers and sinkers inside to lefties, and he's had actually a lot of weak contact that has made him an okay ERA guy but a bad whip guy. It's a constant thing you see for these contact first arms. And Noah Schultz, I think over time, is actually something that could develop further, of course. But right now, we don't want to go for it. Sean Burke is an auto start against the Astros and is a probable against the Yankees. It is tougher against the Yankees. But I mean, I think you're likely just going
to
do that one.
I think like 4 to 6 weeks ago, I wrote up Sean Burke's pitch change. He's another guy who's gone to multiple fastball variations. And I said, I don't know if this will work for this season because it was a new pitch, but it intrigues me for 2027. And I think I should have just been more in the moment because he's been great since then. And kudos to him. And maybe something worth looking into in the offseason is like with these new pitches and how long it takes them to click in, maybe fastball variations are just easier to adapt because it's less about feel than a breaking ball or something like that. But Sean Burke certainly has earned it. The Guardians, we kind of have the same discussion with them literally all the time. Gavin Williams and Parker Messick, you're starting regardless. And I think Joey Cantillo has earned the benefit of the doubt with his recent performance. It's at Tampa Bay, at Cincinnati. But I think you're starting him in those. You're not starting Slade Ciccone. And Tanner Bibee, you're starting just based on whatever your tolerance for risk and pulling your hair out is.
Yep. Yeah, I'm flipping a coin. For the Tigers, we don't know if Tarik Skubal is going to make the next 2 starts. I mean, probably the one on Friday, but on Wednesday, I don't know. Troy Melton's been incredible, so we're going to do that. It's the Royals at home and Orioles at home and then at Sacra Verde. Casey Mize and Framber Valdez. What is going on with Framber Valdez? I don't know. Take the chance if you want. I like Casey Mize hosting the Royals. I think he's fine and solid. Of course, in Sacramento's tough. And then Kiedy Montero just had a phenomenal game. He's getting a lot of whiffs now all of a sudden with his slider. I'm cool with it against the Royals, but I still don't want to do that in Sacramento.
Yeah.
It's the Orioles. So it's a 2-step. I'm cool with that, I think, against the Orioles. The Orioles are a good offense.
Struggling a little bit recently, but yeah, that makes it tough for Montero if you're in like an NFBC format because I like the Baltimore start. The at Athletics start makes me nervous. And I could talk myself into saying this rotation is going to change next week and maybe he only makes 1 start. And in a 15-team league, I'll cross my fingers and use him. But it's tough if you got to lock that in. In a 12, I certainly wouldn't. The Royals, I don't know that you can trust any Royal starter right now. I know you have Michael Wacha as a probable start at Detroit this weekend, and that makes sense to me. Next week, he's at Colorado. I don't know that I can trust Lugo or Dobnak or Noah Cameron. I blurbed the Lunder Avila start against the Giants, and I do think a lot of that was the Giants, but it was his best start of the season. And so maybe he's interesting in deeper formats against the Tigers this weekend, but I'd rather not take that gamble.
Yeah. I'd rather not either. And Michael Wacha at Detroit is fine. Everything else is just Lugo, Dobnak, Cameron, and then 3 in core is no thank you next week. So you can just kind of take the Royals off.
No thank you to most of the Twins rotation as well. They're home against the Athletics this weekend. Then it's 3 against Kansas City, 3 at Seattle, but it's 2-start week for Bailey Ober. And so sure, in a 15-team league, it's Kansas City and at Seattle. And if you wanted to do that, I'm trying to avoid Bailey Ober pretty much anywhere. Joe Ryan, to me, is an auto start. And then Taj Bradley is hilarious because his last outing was terrible. And then this outing against the Guardians was really good. And that's just kind of who Taj Bradley is, that anytime we think he's like locked something in, there's going to be a step back at some point in time. But Taj Bradley against Kansas City, to me, I would put him in a probable start.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back and forth, right? It's like, oh, it looks good. And then he doesn't do well. And it's like, oh, okay, it's bad. It's just, I just don't know what it is. And Connor Prelip, I might be a little too aggressive there if he is returning this weekend against the Athletics, but I feel if he's pitching, he should be fine. He's at Seattle the next week. It's up to you there. But I mean, Joe Ryan, I know he just allowed 6 home runs, but that was ridiculous. And don't worry about the velocity. He was throwing harder earlier on than like the game was kind of lost. And I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to save some bullets. That's kind of how I translated that one.
Joe Ryan, we'll see where he is in a week or two. But yeah. I think they're going to hold on to him. But it'd be nice to see if he goes somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Finishing up with the AL East, the Baltimore Orioles. 3 against Atlanta this weekend, 3 at Detroit, and 3 home against Philadelphia. It's 2-start week for Kyle Bradish, who, you know, you're using right now. He looks pretty good.
He looks great. I mean,
the
really,
strikeouts
actually,
have gone down, but the ratios are much better.
Since May 13th, Kyle Bradish has been like a solid, good pitcher for you, like an SP 2-3.
Yep.
It's kind of wild.
Trevor Rogers and you know, again, he's pitching well surface stat wise, and he's getting away with it to a certain extent, but like at Detroit, I have no problem with, you know, Brandon Young, Atlanta, Philadelphia. I know the stats are good, but I those two starts scare me, and I would not be surprised if those are two really bad outings.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that one. And Brandon Young is just kind of like, I don't quite believe the success that he's had.
Yeah.
And I think Trevor Rogers, I mean, he might not make that start at Detroit because I think he should be traded by the Orioles personally. And
we'll see,
I'm excited for wherever he would go. Boz's curveball is looking much better. And normally I would be really against it, but I feel like he's in a better groove. I wish he just had a better cutter or slider or something like that to pair it.
If you are in a super deep league, you know, Dean Kramer's next 2 starts are against Detroit and the Angels. And so like in a 15 team format, that's not a bad stretch for Dean Kramer. I know the outing against the Red Sox wasn't great, but you know, what are you gonna do? Speaking of those Red Sox, they have 3 against Toronto this weekend, 3 at the Athletics and 3 at the Dodgers. So that's tough. It's 2 start week for Peyton Tolley and Jake Bennett, but it's in Sacramento and then at the Dodgers. I think that both of those guys have pitched well enough that in deeper formats, you've got to use them. In 12 team formats, it becomes more difficult because Peyton Tolley has problems with home runs and is going to be at Sacramento and then against the Dodgers. And Jake Bennett is a, you know, I wouldn't say soft tossing because of his extension. He's like a medium tossing lefty.
He's a medium tossing.
But you know, those aren't great. And so in a 15, I would use both. In a 12, I would be okay if you sat both, but I would prefer Tolley to Bennett.
Yeah. I mean, with Bennett, we know he's been pitching really well. It wasn't, it's not as believable as others. And it's very possible that he just kind of falls off a little bit. I'm not saying he's a bad pitcher or anything like that. It's just against the Dodgers and the Athletics. Like, yeah, this could easily be 4 runs each, right? And Peyton Tolley, it's more about how he performs, I think, than the opponent. So I am going to lower him a little bit just because, yes, sure, the floor is lower now. But the chance of just the overall chance of being a beneficial start or a good start, I think, is the same. So it's just about how bad it can be, right? And I'm going to roll Tolley out there in 12 teamers.
Yeah. The Yankees, and Ranger Suarez may come back on Sunday. We don't know yet. Apparently, it's not a arm health or groin health issue right now. It's that he's also sick. So he's coming off the IL and is sick. And so they haven't wanted to put him back on the mound, but they might on Sunday. As of today, Thursday afternoon, the Red Sox current starter for Sunday is listed as to be determined. And so I think that's probably Suarez coming back. The Yankees, 3 at Philadelphia, 4 at the White Sox, 3 at the Cubs. It's 2-start week for Gerrit Cole and Max Fried. Cole, Fried, Schlittler, you're just using against anybody. Ryan Weathers, Nick, he's teetering now on in a 12-team league. Are you still believing?
I mean, It's up to you. Strikeouts. If you need strikeouts, sure. It's very much reminiscent of like Matthew Boyd in 21 or something like that. And 2019, whatever it is. Where it's like, yeah, he's still going to get you strikeouts, but sure, he will throw bad fastballs. He is Luzardo light. So it's completely up to you. On the flip side of it, if you want wins, you still go with Warren, right? Otherwise, you go with the other studs who are there.
Yeah. Nothing else to say on those guys.
Maybe they get Tarik Skubal.
Maybe. Who knows? They could.
Who knows?
Everybody could get Tarik. You get a Tarik Skubal. A Tarik Skubal.
Maybe.
Tampa Bay Rays probably won't go out and get Tarik Skubal, but they could. They have three against the Guardians this weekend. They have three against Texas and three against the White Sox next week, all at home. It's two-start week for Griffin Jacks. I know some people were talking about dropping Griffin Jacks last week after his bad start. Hopefully you held. Texas White Sox is a pretty good stretch. McClanahan, Rasmussen, I also think you're comfortable using them with how they're pitching. Nick Martinez, for the most part, like, you know, this might be a, how does he keep getting away with this? But he's got a good changeup and good locations, and he's pitching well. And so you're just going to ride it while he is. Ian Seymour is being used behind an opener again today, Thursday, that we have not seen, you know, what that's going to happen. But for fantasy, it doesn't really matter to us. If anything, that's unless probably it's a quality better. Starter.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
As long as he is still going to be in this bulk role, even if it's behind a follower, I kind of like that more. And I still believe in Ian Seymour's ability and talent. And we have told you many weeks in a row that the changeup was not looking like it was last year. And so I still believe in him, but I think that we're not quite at the version of him we saw previously.
Right. And also I should mention that even if he is the follower, it usually isn't for as many innings as you normally would see.
Yes.
Right. Whenever we see followers. So keep that in mind as well. You're going to get a little bit less of it, but it is for the higher chance of a win.
Sure.
You don't have to go with Ian Seymour, just so we're clear, guys.
Yeah. There is a very strong likelihood that Tampa Bay adds an SP4-5 type of pitcher who won't cost them a lot, but bumps Ian Seymour back to the bullpen. So just keep that in mind as well.
And the last
team, before we get to the last team, I just saw a really great anecdote for my rant that I had listed before. Since in MLB history, there are only five pitchers who allowed zero runs, zero walks, two and four hits, and struck out 11 or more and did not get a win. Gavin Williams today was the fifth pitcher in MLB history to do that and not get a win. Thank you, Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll end with the Blue Jays. They have three at Boston this weekend. They have three at Washington next week and three against Seattle. It is not a two-start week for anybody because they're expected to get Max Scherzer back next week. I'm not interested, but just saying that because you would have gotten a two-start week from Spencer Miles if you were interested in him, but I'm not super interested in that as well. Shane Bieber is starting today. Just something to keep an eye on. As of now, we have not seen anything that's happened, but the last start prior to this start against Tampa Bay was better. And so if this start against Tampa Bay is also better, you might start to feel more comfortable with Shane Bieber. I have still a lot of concerns about the health, but just keep an eye on this start on Thursday because it may impact your willingness to pick him up at Tampa Bay. You wrote some words about Kevin Gausman, and I wanted you to share your thoughts on Kevin Gausman because I know some people are banging their heads against the wall.
Yeah, I'm going to say everything else first. Trey Savage, I just do not trust whatsoever to throw fastballs for strikes, right? All of it for strikes. And he'll have some games he does it, and then other days he won't. And it's just, I hate dealing with that kind of thing. Dylan Cease, everybody clamored for him to be an ace, and all of a sudden, then he's not very good for a start. It's like, that's just who he is. Don't want anything to do with Scherzer. Don't want anything to do with Miles. And unless it's Nelson. And with Shane Bieber, What's really cool is that the movement profiles all returned back to what they were last year, which is really good. So then it turns into, all right, are you now commanding it in the right spots for the breaking balls and you're taking over with them? Because that actually isn't what has happened quite yet. So hopefully we get to that in this next one for Tampa Bay. It still would be questionable for the Nationals after. And with Gausman, it's Gausman. Gausman should be fine. He really just should be fine. It's the same dude. He's going through a really rough patch. It's kind of wild that he is. And I don't really see much that says, hey, he deserves to be in this rough patch. It's just weirdness. He gets the Red Sox next, who are not good against right-handers. I think that's cool. He faces the Cardinals after that. I think that's fine. It's up to you. I understand if you just want to bench him until it looks good again, but I think Gausman's still Gausman, and he will get a little bit more strikes on his splitter, and his fastball won't get tattered as much. That simple.
A few weeks ago, I traded Troy Melton for Kevin Gausman, and I thought I was going to get a little bounce back, and it's been real disappointing.
I'm so sorry.
You take your shots, and sometimes, you know, as they say, dems the breaks.
Yes. Get out of here.
That's going to do it for us here on the Corner. Should have a very interesting podcast next week.
Oh, yeah.
Because we might have some shifting rotations, a lot of landscapes changing. So I am excited for that. We'll be back again next Thursday. And then just remember, on trade deadline day, Nick is going to be with Paul Spohr from what time?
Probably around, I believe it. The deadline is around 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. I can't remember. We'll be live 2 hours before it.
And that's actually brilliant because over on the Roto-World or NBC Sports channel, James Schiano and I are going to be doing our Q&A live starting around 2 o'clock. So you could hang out with me and James and then go right to hang out with Nick and Paul and just have people talking deadlines all day on Monday. So make sure that'll be a pretty fun time.
Yeah, 6 p.m. is the end.
Maybe I'll quick get off the air and put on a suit and tie and come say hi to Nick.
There we go. We'll be live around 4 o'clock or so, maybe 4:30 on Trade Deadline Day.
Great. All right. That's going to do it for us today. I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go make some mock trades.